Hello, everyone, and welcome to Spirit of Truth Church for this talk on critical theory, the origins, and recent history. Now, as we get started into this, I would like to actually, before we, okay, perfect. As we get started into this, this is a hard topic to talk about tonight specifically. We're going to be addressing things in America's history. We're going to be talking about the actual real main events of racism in America's history. And some of it is pretty intense. Now, I'm actually going to be leaving out a lot of the graphic detail and content, and there's a couple of reasons why, and we'll get into more of that once we get there. But there are actual good reasons to leave that out at times. There are times you need to explain, there are times you need to leave it out. But again, we're going to be talking about critical theory origins and recent history. Now, to kick this off, we've got to ask why or how in the country did all of this stuff start to make a comeback? All of this, these conversations about racism, all this conversation about critical theory, where did this all start? And you can kind of trace it back to the Trayvon Martin death, okay? Some people argue that it sparked the Great Awakening, because at this point, there were three Black female activists who created the Black Lives Matter organization. And there's a lot to be said about the BLM and that organization, which we won't get into probably in this talk, but just know that it was a front for essentially Marxist thinking. It had really very little to do with Black Lives Mattering at all. And it had everything to do with promoting an ultra-progressive leftist Marxist agenda, which is fascinating. So, but we're going to continue on. Now, the media then began to pick up, take wind of this, being dominated by, again, leftist thinking. And then you start to hear things about intersectionality, systemic racism, whiteness, white privilege, white supremacy, things which you wouldn't ever even hear in the 90s. Now, all of a sudden, you're hearing all over the place, okay? And so media then began to capture the death of any Black person, especially if it was in a police conflict, for example, in the case of George Floyd. And this led to both violent riots and peaceful protests. It was both. There were a lot of violent riots. There were also peaceful protests as well. I mean, you know, some people were genuinely upset. Now, the thing is the media then begins to dominate, as they do. And they begin to tell stories and begin to influence people about these actual events. And the funny thing is these are events that happened with some regularity, but now they're being given an outsized position on media. And so they begin to take up a larger space in people's minds. And with the media's slant on them, they suddenly begin to shift people's thinking. So simultaneously to this, you also see direct attacks on the evangelical church. There are a lot of essentially womanizing scandals that were going on in the church, abuse issues, misconduct, pastors were resigning. Like, it was bad around this time. You get the Me Too movement as well, all that kind of stuff. Very, very bad things were happening around this. Now, that essentially causes this woke movement to really gain ground and gain roots. But here's the issue. This wouldn't have happened had there not been at least something in American history for it to latch on to, okay? And here's where this gets really interesting in terms of education and in terms of how we talk about American history and what we emphasize, what we de-emphasize, and the role we give various things that occur in American history. And so, and I'll go ahead and use a quote from the quote. And again, this is from the book. I'll go ahead and show you the book here. Give me one second. This is from the Critical Dilemma. Again, very good book. I'm enjoying it. I'm curious of how I'm going to feel about everything in there, but I do like it. It's been very good so far. They say, quote, discussion of history, there's actually two issues. They say there's two issues with talking about history. And they say, one, quote, discussion of history is merely a thinly disguised excuse to silence dissent and coerce conservatives into agreement on matters of racial justice, end quote. So in other words, they're saying that, oh, well, anytime somebody talks about history and slavery or the other types of things that go on, you know, it's just an attempt to cajole or to force conservatives to bend the knee to wokeism, okay? Again, it definitely is used that way at times, absolutely. But that doesn't mean we can't and shouldn't discuss it at some point, and we do need to. Second, they would also argue another issue with discussing history is, quote, the endless fixation on historical injustices is ultimately harmful for people of color, end quote. And again, there is some truth to that, too. It's not that it's completely incorrect. There was one great quote. Another quote was, for a racial group to view itself perpetually as victims is dangerous. And that is true. It's dangerous to them, actually. It's really, really bad. So you have to be aware of these things, even as we discuss history. Now, the other part of this, too, though, is this, is that we're going to discuss aspects of racism throughout history today. We're going to take a look at the two main ones that the book points out, and those are slavery and the Jim Crow laws and the Black Codes. And the problem, though, with this is this, because those are the two that critical theory predominantly uses to describe how America was systemically racist. Okay, those are the two. So we're going to take a look at those for a little bit here. We're going to talk about them. We're going to talk about the proper way to view these things so that we don't either go into wokeism and so that we don't just ignore that it happened. But there's something else I'd like to mention. And the book kind of talks about this, but not really. And I was kind of surprised it didn't maybe pull this out. It might later. But it's this. There is still an institution in America that is heavily, actually, systemically racist because it was designed to eliminate Black people to begin with and people of color. And people talk about this origin of this thing all the time. But it's fascinating how, in the modern day, this thing has been turned into, quote, you know, like, personal freedom and economic freedom. And it's been tied to people having freedom. And yet, this thing was designed to eliminate people of color from America, to control their population. And you probably already know what this thing is. It's abortion. And the scary thing is that for all the crying and frustration about the history of slavery and the history of Jim Crow laws, both of which, now again, we can talk about certain aspects of laws that might still be in place in various places, but for the most part, the separate but equal stuff is gone from the laws, and, you know, people can go to the same drinking fountains and things like that. But here's the thing. Abortion's stronger than ever. The arguably, the worst, the thing that is robbing people of color's future, that thing is still in force today. And it's celebrated and not decried as actually the third great evil of racism. That's fascinating to me. And that hasn't been mentioned yet. They might mention it later, but I'll say this. In American history, there really are two things that are the greatest stains on our history. The first one is that 50 million babies have been murdered through abortion. That's awful. It's horrific. The second is 250 years of slavery, 100 years of black codes, Jim Crow, and lynching. That's awful. And I'll even say this just to start off in that thing. When you read the accounts of some of those, and I'm not going to read the accounts, and I'll tell you why here in a second. Some of those accounts sound like they come out of the Holocaust, to be honest. Some of them sound like they come out of, right out of medieval torture. Some of them sound like they come out of the Holocaust. This isn't even just, you know, slavery base level or even just, you know, realities of slavery. This is overt, objective cruelty and sadism is really what a good chunk of this was. Now, I'm not saying every single person was that, no, but it was absolutely prevalent throughout the entire system of slavery. There's no question. And so we're going to talk about these things. Now, why am I not going to talk about a lot of details and go through the goriness of it? There are times you need to. When is that? When people don't recognize a thing as bad. So in the case of abortion, for example, we need to talk about the we need to talk about the gory details. Why? Because a lot of people just think abortion's fine and keep doing it. And so by forcing people to face up to the actual details of the gory event itself, to actually see what it is, helps give you the proper emotional response to it. I don't think many people are going to be arguing that the type of slavery that was going on in America in its origin should return. So we don't need to go through the gory detail. We need to understand that it was that way, but we all understand, hopefully, that this is a bad thing, a very, very bad thing, that at times dipped into levels of atrocity that things like the Holocaust. Now, it wasn't systematic extermination of people. It was a systematic enslaving of people. And there was a lot of abuse and a lot of very, very, very vile things that went on with it. But again, we're not going to go into detail because the understanding is people know that it's bad. Okay. With abortion, people don't understand that it's bad, so you need those details in order to elicit the appropriate emotional response. But I am going to read one thing. And it was fascinating. I'm really glad they included it in the book. And I'll quote it from the book. And we're going to get there in a little bit. But it's a letter written by a slave who is basically asking for freedom. It's fascinating. We're going to read it. It's a beautiful piece of history, actually. And some of those letters and documents that people wrote back then were just gorgeous. So we'll talk about it in terms of language. So let's talk about the slavery issue. So you'll notice in the liberal circles, they love to talk about the 1619 Project, or August 1619. Now, we got to understand, what are they referring to, okay? The U.S. at that point is still under British rule. That's one thing to understand. And essentially, there was a delivery of some number of odd Negroes. That was the specific line in this document that was put forward. And they arrived at Port Comfort Hampton, Virginia, on the White Line, which was a privateer ship that was Dutch. And essentially, these people have been taken from São João Bautista, which is a Portuguese slave ship that was under contract to deliver slaves, which is very interesting. And the argument then from the 1619 Project, from groups, the critical theory groups, is that slavery's been part of the nation since its founding. It's been the thing upon which the nation was built. It was built on slavery, that everything we have is essentially built on slavery. These are all misconstruals of history. The entire country was not built on slavery. Slavery was part of it. But actually, when you really assess history, slavery held the country back, which is interesting. Slavery absolutely held the country back. And when slavery was eliminated, that's actually when you see the greatest growth. This is also, by the way, why the South was about 100 years behind the North. I remember even in college, I was taking an American history course in college, and basically the assessment was, yeah, pretty much the North and the South, the North was about 100 years advanced, more advanced than the South because of slavery. So it actually held the nation back, oddly enough. But again, the funny thing about that, though, is that's actually not even when the first slaves came to America. The first African slaves came to America in 1526 to South Carolina as part of a Spanish expedition, and they revolted and abandoned the settlement. So there it is. But truth of the matter is, from 1525 to 1866, 12.5 million Africans were brought into the Americas. To the Americas. South America, you know, the Middle America, you know, Central America, Middle America, Central America, and North America. Hundreds of thousands were specifically brought to the U.S., and they were viewed not as people, but as commodity items, things to be sold, bought, and traded, okay? So there's just no getting around it. That's bad. Not even trying to explain it in terms of history. That's just bad. You just don't buy and sell people. It's not a good thing. And additionally, we need to understand that during this trip, 2 million died on the trip. That's a lot of people. Now, I mentioned 2 million because 50 million people are murdered through abortion. Still today. But 2 million died on this trip in horrific, inhumane situations. And the details are grisly. The details are inhumane. The details are vile. And like I said, at times it approaches the horror of the Holocaust. You'd think that's getting to Holocaust level evil, okay? Now, the slave population then grew, and by the 1700s, which now we're getting into true American history as opposed to British colonial rule, laws are now being passed at that point in the late 1700s, to control the black slave population, okay? However, we have to understand a couple things. One, this was not a unified position throughout the country. There were those who stood against slavery. We do have to ask serious questions, though, why the church didn't stand up against slavery. We have to ask why the church allowed slavery. Like, there's a lot of those types of questions. We're going to be dealing with those later as we kind of get into more of the church conversation. We will be talking about that later. But something we need to understand, though, is this, that when you look at the slave populations, when they asked for freedom or when they made an appeal for freedom, they based it on their deep-rooted belief in Jesus, the Messiah, the Bible, and Christianity. And so now I'd like to go ahead and read this. And I'm glad they found this. This is an excellent excerpt. And this is from Felix, a slave. So let's talk about this here. I'm going to go ahead and get this, read this in full. I think it deserves to be read in full. It's a bit long, but I will in terms of an oration on a YouTube channel. But I would like to read it. This is Felix's petition. Province of the Massachusetts Bay to His Excellency Thomas Hutchinson, Esquire, Governor, to the Honorable His Majesty's Council, into the Honorable House of Representatives in General Court assembled at Boston, the 6th day of January, 1773, the humble petition of many slaves living in the town of Boston and other towns in this province is this, namely that Your Excellency and Honors, the Honorable Representatives, would be pleased to take their unhappy state and condition under your wise and just consideration. We desire to bless God, who loves mankind, who sent his Son to die for their salvation, and who is no respecter of persons, that he hath lately put it into the hearts of multitudes on both sides of the water to bear our burdens, some of whom are men of great note and influence, who have pleaded our cause with arguments, which we hope will have their weight with this honorable court. We presume not to dictate to Your Excellency and Honors, being willing to rest our cause on your humanity and justice, yet would beg leave to say a word or two on the subject. Although some of the Negroes are vicious, who doubtless may be punished and restrained by the same laws which are in force against other of the king's subjects, there are many others of quite different character, and who, if made free, would soon be able as well as willing to be or to bear a part in the public charges. Many of them of good natural parts are discreet, sober, honest, and industrious. And may it not be said of many that they are virtuous and religious, although their condition is in itself so unfriendly to religion, and every moral virtue except patience. How many of that number have there been, and are now in this province, who have had every day of their lives embittered with this most intolerable reflection, that let their behavior be what it will, neither they nor their children to all generations shall ever be able to do or possess or enjoy anything, no, not even life itself, but in a manner as the beasts that perish. We have no property, we have no wives, no children, we have no city, no country, but we have a Father in heaven, and we are determined, as far as his grace shall enable us, and as far as our degraded, contemptuous life will admit, to keep all his commandments. Especially will we be obedient to our masters, so long as God in his sovereign providence shall suffer us to be beholden in bondage. It would be impudent, if not presumptuous in us, to suggest to Your Excellency and Honors any law or laws proper to be made in relation to our unhappy state, which although our greatest unhappiness is not our fault, and this gives us great encouragement to pray and hope for such relief as is consistent with your wisdom, justice, and goodness. We think ourselves very happy that we may thus address the great and general court of this province, which great and good court is to us the best judge under God, what is wise, just, and good. We humbly beg leave to add this one thing more. We pray for such relief only, by which no possibility can ever be productive of the least wrong or injury to our masters, but to us will be as life from the dead. Signed, Felix. Man, that is a letter. And again, it acknowledged the awfulness of the situation, but it didn't speak in terms of rebellion and in terms of violence. Instead, it sought to appeal to a common denominator. God. The image of God. Jesus Christ, the Messiah, who has forgiven you of your sins. It's absolutely beautiful and deserves to be read. Yes, you may absolutely ask questions, and I'm actually going to take some questions now because that's the... I want to say maybe just a few more things in the end, but yes, please. Go ahead and ask questions. This is a great time to do so. I'll just kind of talk again just a little bit, give my thoughts, but as soon as I see a question pop up, I'm using my notes and other things as well, but I do hop over to YouTube to the chat to see if there are questions. So yes, please do. I hope you're still there, because I'd love to get questions. But again, what I wanted to say out of this is this, in closing on this first piece of it, the slavery piece, is that it was horrific. There's no question about it. There's no question that differentials even were created. I mean, how could there not be, you know? However, to forget... Oh, when was that letter written? Sorry, let me see if I can go find that real quick. Give me one second. See if I can get when that letter was written. Let's see. 1773 is at least when it was delivered. 1773. Beautiful letter, though. When we look at slavery in America, we have to acknowledge not just the horror, but all of it. We have to acknowledge, impeccable English, I agree. We have to acknowledge that it was horrible, vile, and wrong. We have to acknowledge that there were, that the slave population was deeply religious and, in fact, appealed to their understanding of Christianity as the way for to essentially exit slavery, that they appealed to God. That was essentially the appeal. The arguments were biblical arguments. They were Christian arguments. So whether or not individual churches were for or against slavery is almost irrelevant towards Christianity in general. They understood the Bible as giving them human rights, as giving them dignity, and as making their case that they shouldn't be slaves, even while also simultaneously acknowledging that, and this is very key, that the Bible said, but if you are a slave, obey your master. And they even said it in that letter. They said, well, again, if you find yourself in this situation, this is how you're to behave. It's interesting that they acknowledged that. They didn't get angry with God at that. They simply petitioned God for them to themselves be released. It's very interesting how they talked about it. By their own words, how they understood Scripture, which I think they have absolutely correct. I think, and again, I mean, they were the slaves, right from their own words. I think they had it. It's God is for the freeing of the slaves, no matter where they are. But it's interesting in their demeanor and how they pursued it. They didn't pursue it through violence. They pursued it through prayer. They pursued it through petition. And when a war eventually was fought, it was a just war. Now, I hope you have questions. Still some questions in there. Because I'm about to move on, but if you're still here, feel free and throw a question, and I'll try and check back as well. If anybody has any more questions, I'll try and hop back as well. I hope you guys are enjoying, by the way. All right. So again, we have to view it from the whole picture. The other thing that we can't forget, and this is what so often, unfortunately, people of critical theory don't say, is that slavery was ended. And the fact that it was ended, by the way, is a huge deal. Because this didn't go down without a fight. Now, some people say, again, when we talk about Civil War, which I don't really want to get too much into this, was it a fight over slavery? No, it was a fight over states' rights, yes. Was slavery essentially the underlying current to it? Absolutely. In other words, the comment was, well, slave state versus free state, you have to add one and then the other, otherwise people are going to do this, and then guess what? What was the fear? The fear was that if you added too many free states, what would happen? They'd outvote the slave states and end slavery. I mean, this was part of the fear. So, you know, yes, it was about states' rights versus, you know, versus federal rights and all that kind of thing. But to say that slavery was not at all on the picture or part of the war is also incorrect. And so people were willing to die to end slavery. There's no question about it. Now, beyond that, we also have to say that, again, something major like this, again, all of these things were based in scriptural arguments, based in Christian arguments, that Christianity had a major play. We don't have time to really dig into that piece, although that would be another fun talk at some point, digging into the piece of how Christianity basically led to the abolitionist movement, because you really have to go back to Great Britain, actually, and William Wilberforce and things like that to even get the full picture on that. You got to link that in, both what was going on there and what's going on with America at the various times it was happening, all that kind of stuff. You have to hit them both. But again, to isolate that and say that's the evil that dominated America and that's all America's about is just patently incorrect. We need to acknowledge the reality of the evil that it was, but we also need to acknowledge the beautiful things that occurred while it was going on. Not beautiful things about it, but things that occurred while it was going on. Things like the writing of that letter. Things like the expression from the slave population of their Christianity that gave us some of the most beautiful written things ever. Truly, in spite of the great evil, Jesus Christ shone. And that's the other piece that I think as Christians we need to begin emphasizing is where are their stories? We hear the horror stories, that's true, but where are the stories of the Christians, the determination, the slave population, the Christian religion that developed in the slave populations? Those are the types of things, as well as the stories, the horror stories, also need to be heard, or we aren't getting the full picture. And we have to remember that this doesn't end with slavery maintains today. It ends with the death of slavery. Now, two things I'd like to say before we move on to the next one, which is Jim Crow laws and black codes. First of all, I understand that slavery is not gone around the world. Slavery still exists around the world. And we have trafficking and other types of things like that, human trafficking, that still exist even in America. This is actually a serious problem. So it's interesting to me that people get so up in arms about this issue, the slavery issue that has been dealt with, and then, but why are we focusing on that when we still actually have real issues like this going on, and why aren't we demanding justice in these cases? That's one point. Second point is that the critical woke theory people would like you to focus on the slavery issue of the past, but they don't want to focus on the abortion issue of the present. And it's a very well documented that Margaret Sanger, who created Planned Parenthood and all this junk and promoted abortion, was doing so to essentially restrict black populations. There's no question she was doing that. She's documented saying it, etc. Why is that completely unemphasized? Because that is still going on today. If you want to talk about systemic racism in America, there is one institution in which it is still there. It is the abortion institution. That's where it still is. That's the institution that has to fall. Now, I'd like to go ahead and move on, unless there's any other questions. I'd like to go ahead and move on to the second part of this, which is the Jim Crow aspect. Now, this is where stuff gets really, really kind of heinous as well. So, first of all, we have to talk about this. These laws, collectively called Jim Crow laws, it actually incorporates more than that. Really, probably more all-encompassing term is black codes. And this was an attempt to keep black people and the concerns of black people out of civic life. Quote, it was depriving them of the number of societal goods and rights, including the right to vote, the right to serve on juries, the right to own and carry weapons, and the right to own, rent, or lease land, end quote. In other words, okay, you're free, but good luck being a member of society. So it's a weird situation, or you know, and again, these were going on so other slaves, so. But they persisted after slavery was ended. And so essentially you had all of these things, like separate but equal facilities was one of them. You had really bad labor contracts. You had defrauding black people of rightful wages. One of the more official governmental ones was the, quote, redlining issue and the defrauding benefits from the GI Bill. Again, all very bad things. But to summarize this, it was a set of laws that prevented black people from receiving any of the governmental support or benefits or advantages that white citizens could enjoy. That's essentially what they were, okay? And it was an attempt also in society even to keep white and black people separate. So this is a problem. Arguably, almost in a sense, you know, it's hard to say whether it's worse than slavery or not and the damage that it did, because here's the problem. When you have a population being a slave population based on color, you think they're subhuman, true enough. When you have laws segregating people, it almost makes it more personal, because then it's like whether or not you even own slaves is now immaterial. This is now governing everyone's personal interaction with each other. And in some sense, that actually can entrench racism even faster. And actually, this is why, and I will argue this is why, the anti-racism issues, things that are going on today, where black people and white people are being segregated and separated by the critical theory institutions, is creating racism in the country. It's creating it. There's a very interesting thing when you look in the 90s and the early 2000s, where, and I could even say this, where there was a general sentiment that was the generation that had moved past racism. Now, not to say that racism had ended, or even to say that, you know, all racism was nearing elimination or anything like that, but that was kind of the generation where, at least in large portions of the country, and I'm not saying everywhere, you know, people began to just treat each other like people. You know, you had a lot of iconic things, you know, I'll even say this, even in the culture. I mean, I can share a personal story on this one. I remember when Michael Jackson released his video Black and White. And I remember, and I'm trying to think if this was, what year was that? Let me look at that real quick, because I want to make sure I get this right. Because I remember it was a long time ago in terms of, I was young at that point. let's see here. November 1991. Yes, I was in grade school. I remember seeing this for the first time with all of my friends. And I remember thinking, literally, this is what I remember thinking. Praise God, we're all friends. Because in our minds as kids, and we had, like I said, if you know anything about Rockford, Illinois, you had black people there, but the white people weren't homogenous. You had Swedes there, you had Italians, and we all kind of looked different. We all had our own things. We all had our own ethnicities and families. And the thing was, is we were all going to the same school together, all doing the same stuff. And it was all of us together. And I remember when that video was released, and I just remember thinking that, like, praise God that we can all be together. And it's interesting, because I think, to a large extent, and I'd highly suggest going back and reading MLK's I Have a Dream speech, the crazy thing is, in 30 years, his dream had become reality in our minds. And I'm not talking just white people, I'm talking about white people, black people, Italian people, everybody in our little city. When we were going in there, the kids in that generation, our minds, what we were thinking, at least from my experience, and so I'm saying my experience, that was a reality. And I know, because I would hear about issues of racism being talked about, or issues, divisions, etc., going back, 20, 30 years, and how those things weren't present amongst the student population. Now, it's very fascinating. It's very, very fascinating. But now we're seeing a resurgence where it is us versus them. See, I think that's the best way to describe it. There was no us versus them. At least, again, I'm talking about from my own personal experience here. I know it's a microcosm. I know it's small. Own personal experience. But the fact that could even have happened, I think, is a testament to the work that had been done before in the civil rights movement, and just in being able to accept people as people, not by the color of their skin or by their ethnicity. Comment here, I remember watching Boy Meets World. They apparently had the first white boy, black girl in a real relationship, and it was the norm. Yeah, see, that this is the thing. It's to say that things haven't changed, to do all that, and here's the thing, though. Even when people are talking about the racism issue, they're really not even talking about interpersonal reactions. Microaggressions aside, they're not talking about the overt racism anymore. They're talking about this systemic racism issue. And we're going to get to that later. But again, to ignore the things that have happened, to lay the guilt on, that's going to entrench racism forever. That's the problem. And that's actually what they want. The problem is that when the left realized that racism was actually being dealt with, they realized that their main talking point was going away. They needed that talking point back. And so they stoked this stuff like crazy for many years now, for like, I think, 12 years now. So it's become a problem. But essentially with the Black Codes, so the Black Codes weren't resolved with the Civil War. The Black Codes really aren't really resolved until you really have MLK and the Civil Rights Movement. And so when do you see some of that stuff going down? Well, you see it happening in the 1960s. So 1964, Civil Rights Act, Voting Rights Act of 65, Fair Housing Act of 68, you start to see, legally at least, now again, it still takes time for these things to be phased out, and I wouldn't even argue that some of this stuff happens today under the table. In other words, it's not overt like this was, but it absolutely could happen under the table, and it probably does. Again, I'm not all-knowing, so I don't know specific instances, but you do hear things and stuff, and I have encountered one situation where somebody flat-out admitted that they were doing it. Illegally, I might add, but they did admit they were doing it. But that was actually oddly enough tied to Freemasonry, which is fascinating. So, anywho, Black Codes, that carries through a lot of history as well. So now we have to understand this, that it's really not till the 60s, the 1960s, that we really start casting off this, at least entrenched racism stuff for real. So there is a lot of American history that's got racism in it. There's no question about it. But to paint that as the dominant feature, that would be incorrect. To ignore the role of Christianity, good or bad, but there's a lot of good, especially in the black populations, the role of Christianity and the role of God, that's a problem. And so this is the issue. When we look at history, the left and the critical theory folk would like to say, far left, if you will, progressives, would like to say, it's all evil and there's no good anywhere. And that's just simply not true. History is always going to have its real bad junk, and its real amazing stuff, and its real good stuff. And we have to look at it in total. And so even when assessing American history, to do so from that heavy of a bias and a slant is really improper. And I would like to argue this just as the final point tonight, is that it is Christianity and the Constitution, even though you have, you know, the Three-Fifths Compromise and all that kind of stuff, that it is the fundamental principles in those two documents that actually allowed for the freeing of the slaves and for the civil rights movement. Again, Martin Luther King Jr., and I can talk about some things, interesting things about his history and about his belief set. There's no question he rooted his belief in the equal rights of people. He rooted it in scripture, he rooted it in the Bible, he rooted it in a biblical worldview. There's no doubt about that. And so again, to begin to argue against these things can be a very big issue. By against these things, I mean to be able to begin to argue against the strides that were made or the victories that were won, and to say, well, those victories were really hollow, you know, it's still horrible today, that's doing a disservice. And so today was really just about taking a fair view of history, taking a fair look at history. How do we approach it? How do we assess it? What's going on with it and things like that? I will take any questions that people have at this point. I also invite anyone to join us on our Zoom call. We have Zoom calls, so there's a lot more views of this talk, apparently 65 views, which is not, that's a lot more than I normally have. So there's only 5 people, I think, still viewing. But my point is, anybody who is still here, you're welcome to join. I'll give, because there are probably some new people, I will give a little bit about it. What we do is we get on for a call. We'll probably be on for about a half an hour. You can join for as long as you want. You are allowed to ask any questions. The only thing we ask is, it is technically a church meeting. So I would just ask that people be respectful. It's a place to ask questions, to discuss, but it is a place to be respectful, because it is an official church meeting at that point. So, you know, there are real questions we can address, and we can do the best that we can and things like that. But I look forward to it. We have a great time. I mean, we've had people join us from YouTube all the time, and new people pop in and stuff. It's always fun. So yeah, I don't see more questions. So we're going to go ahead. I'm going to get that Zoom call set up. I'm going to get that Zoom call set up here real quick for us. All right. And I'm clicking the link, copy meeting link. And this is the church meetings link. Okay. There's the link. And now I'm opening the church meetings Zoom. Okay. Perfect. Now I'm starting it. Perfect. I'm meeting my audio. Okay. All right. So, thank you all. So, by the way, when you go into the Zoom, it's going to put you in a meeting, holding room. Just do that until I close down the stream, because I can't really get in and do it until I've closed down the stream. So go ahead and just wait in there. If you're interested in chatting afterwards with me, literally, I'll be there, and some other people as well. So thank you guys so much. I hope you enjoyed this talk on critical theory, origins, recent history, and how we should approach history. I hope that came through pretty heavily, how we are to approach history, giving both the good and the bad its due. Again, I hope this is a blessing. I hope we handle this well. I definitely poured over this a lot in terms of how to discuss this topic, how to handle this topic. It's not an easy one to discuss or handle. And for what we did in 45 minutes, hopefully that added to the conversation. And I look forward to chatting with some of you soon. And so again, thank you so much for joining us here at Spirit of Truth Church. I hope you have a wonderful night.